Movie Mavericks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Movie Mavericks, speaking of fucking long, uncut European cocks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Now for your hosts, Jason and Trevor.
I can't wait.
Hey now, everybody. Welcome to episode 260 of the Movie Mavericks Podcast. I'm Trevor Anderson. Send you over to Jason Rugard. He's got a rundown for us.
All right. On episode. Do you like that? We're going to start this off on the right foot. Or not. Yeah. So now that the toad's out of the building, today we'll be talking about Taken. Say that three times fast. And its box office prowess comes coming weekend. Also, Stallone has tweeted the end of the new Rocky. Can you believe that? We're discussing that as well as the title of the new Rambo. Foxcatcher director Bennett Miller has been attacked by its subject. Mark Schultz talked about that, as well as movie theater attendance hitting a 20-year low. Trevor's review of The Equalizer and Tusk. I'm going to talk about Electric Boogaloo. That's even hard to say. We'll talk about The Wolf of Wall Street and The Grand Budapest Hotel, as well as Black Sea and the Project Almanac trailer. But of course, as we do, how we do, let's get into the game.
It's not a question of enough, pal. It's a zero-sum game. Somebody wins, somebody loses.
Let's play the HSX.com box office prediction game.
Yes, let's play.
Yes.
So we were totally wrong last weekend.
We were wrong. People gave a shit about the win in black.
Feels right to start the year off with a huge loss.
Yeah, I'm in the hole already. I feel like it's the new year. I'm already in debt. Thanks.
Yeah, we were off by about $10 million.
You know, last year it was around X-Men that I really shit the bed. And this year I'm just coming out guns blazing. You know what I mean? I'm just not even wearing depends.
It's all right.
This is bad.
Yeah. $15 million, so I guess.
To be fair, one of the most front-loaded weekends of all time. This had made about $8 million on Friday and limped to $15 million. So this is going to quickly close, maybe not even hit $30 million, which is obviously a disappointment, but they sold a weekend. Somehow they got – I didn't know there was a fan base for the Woman in Black series. Maybe there isn't.
Well, I guess the first one – even for a weekend. Yeah, I knew – I heard the word of mouth on the first one was surprisingly good, which I didn't get, especially after I saw it, but – I guess I'm out of loop on Woman in Black.
Yeah, well, the less said, the better on that. Let's move on and talk about Taken, obviously the third installment in this very popular franchise. This is one of the launching pad for Liam Neeson's late career resurgence as an action hero. And now we have the third go-around, which almost looks like a reboot in a way. This doesn't look like it's continuing that storyline from the first two, which makes it a little bit more intriguing to me. I think this is going to do very well. What do you think about Taken?
Yeah, well, I think obviously it's going to do well, but this definitely looks like more of an action-oriented film. So, yeah, right. How could it not do well, right?
Right. How well does it do? What is the bar set at for Taken 3?
I don't know. That's a good question.
That's a great question. I mean,
let's find out. Usually, yeah.
Exactly. Hello, Bob.
I wanted to take people along on the journey with me to finding the bar for Taken.
It's
and
a process
I'm
of
scrolling, here. And I'm going to the next page, and I'm scrolling.
And we're going
to
find it.
It's a wonderful voyage. It's a wonderful voyage. $30 million.
Okay, that's right in line with where I was starting to think.
That's okay with you.
That's okay with me. That's respectable.
That's good.
Because I think this does anywhere between 25 and 40. So I'm going 37.5 on this bad boy. I'm just throwing it out. I'm being brazen this year. It worked so well last year for me. So, I mean, why not just continue the trend?
I'm going to go with the opening weekend of Live Free or Die Hard, which was $33 million and some change.
All right, nice comparison there. So
I'm putting this in right here. Yes.
Taken comes out this Friday, January 9th, as well as Inherent Vice on a wider scale. I know we're not doing that in the box office.
400 screens, 400 theaters.
Yeah, but still, it's starting to expand.
Selma's going wide, but I don't know how wide. Probably fairly wide. They've got a 15 million
slow
for it. So it, yeah, I didn't want to. It's already been out. Those are hard to guess.
Right, yeah.
I didn't include it.
We want to acknowledge it here that these movies are making their Oscar rollouts here. But I do want to see Inherent Vice. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, it looks weird and good.
Yeah, all the good stuff. All right, let's get on to the news.
News.
You know what happened this week?
I got no idea.
Yes, you do, because I had to call you and call you up on the phone like you know, Perry White over here. Get on the phone and tell you about this Stallone tweet, because I follow the Twitter feed and all that, and Stallone tweeted out a picture. Yeah, all those tweets.
The Stallone
tweets.
He's
a very prolific Twitterer, this Stallone.
No, he's not. Is he?
Well, he, I don't know.
I scrolled through there. It looked like he wasn't, and then it looks like he has his moments. He's got his months.
Okay, my old man could barely send out a fucking text message. This guy's like 70.
He's got people, so I'm sure, helping him.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. That's true. But this was a picture that was taken from his phone. It was of his desk. He had the last page of the script for Creed with a notepad, had some notes on it, and
a bunch of knives sticking out of his desk.
Yeah, a bunch of knives, look like a glass of wine or something.
And he gets a little bored. He twiddles away at his desk.
I did like the Everlast vice grips on there. Just, you know, just working on his forearms. Yeah. And but if you could crop the picture and flip it upside down, which people did, including myself, you could read that the winner of the fight is, you know, so and so. We don't want to spoil it for you here. And that, but I'm going to spoil you there.
Well, spoil
that
it.
Rocky, yeah, that Rocky has cancer and is undergoing chemo. And I was so upset about this. Why bring this character back out when they've retired him so beautifully in Rocky
to
Balboa?
Beat him down
to just,
something even,
I mean,
worse?
To give that, I mean, Adrian's character had cancer. I was so upset when I read that. I mean, this was, I was beside myself. I was thinking about pulling some North Korean shit on some theaters if this goes down.
Well, I do have to say, and I told you this when we talked, that you went and saw The Last Rocky. You went and were an extra on The Last Rocky.
Right.
And when they filmed the in-fight sequence, they did it three times every which way, right? They did a win, a tie, and then a win. Yeah. Well, right. Yeah,
always, you can see all those available on the DVD, the special fixtures, in fact.
But so perhaps what I was thinking was that perhaps he gave away nothing. This is just a page from a, you know, version of the Rocky script, and who knows what from this is going to be the reality and what isn't.
Right, how things are edited and stuff. I understand that about the winner of the fight, but what I'm more upset about is giving this character who's like a James Bond.
He might not have cancer, though, is the other thing I'm saying as well.
That last scene is too precious. I'm telling you, that will sink everything. That makes this so fucking corny. I don't care how well they can carry it off. I'm not a fan of this whole trajectory. I was for this project until this was released. And really, I don't know why this didn't cause more of an stir on the internet that Rocky's got cancer, but...
Oh, nobody cares about Rocky anymore.
Apparently not. Just me. I'm over here. My blood pressure's
through. We've already closed out the Rocky saga, as far as probably a lot of people are concerned, twice. So you're really going to do it again and then try to up yourself over that? You know, no one wants that. We just, if you're going to make another Rocky movie, okay, fine, make another Rocky movie. But shit, you don't have to one up yourself.
I was just reading a Chris Rock interview in Rolling Stone recently, and he was talking about top five and certain things, and he was talking about Rocky. All of a sudden, he brought up Rocky to the interviewer, and he says, "You ever seen the Rocky movies?" And the interviewer said, "Of course." He said, "Well, there's six of them." He goes, "Three of them are really fucking good, though." And he doesn't specify which three, but then he goes on to talk about part three with Mr. T and how Rocky gets all Hollywood, loses it, has to go to the dirty, crummy gym and get it all, you know, the hunger back, the eye of the tiger. And it's interesting that those movies, everybody can either pick one chapter in that series to kind of identify with or pull something out of, you know. It's a lot of life lessons in the series.
Yeah.
No shit. All right. Well, incidentally, Stallone also delivered the line of the subtitle of the new Rambo, which is Rambo 5, something that I didn't think was actually going to happen ever, let alone even as recently as a couple weeks ago when they were talking about it. But apparently this is going to happen. Rambo 5 will be titled Rambo Last Blood. I mean, that's clever that it's just...
Who knows?
It just reeks of just... Yeah. I know, right? By the time Millennium releases this thing, it's Rambo Last First Blood Part 2. Rambo 4 Part 2.
But we already had a last... I don't know. Like, I'm...
Talk about a send-off. I mean, we've had a send-off.
I'm nostalgic. Yeah, I get nostalgic, but there's a point at which it's just like, all right, is there nothing... And I guess there's not, because really, when you look at the other things that he does, I don't know how else can he get a movie put on the big screen anymore, right? Maybe he has, and we've already talked about this, I feel like, because he keeps doing this.
Right.
But, you know, maybe it's the only way, so if that's the case, then fuck it, keep going.
I'd like to be on record having said that I hope I'm pleasantly disappointed, you know, in what I'm. I hope I'm surprised and disappointed.
Sometimes you are. He can do that.
Because at the same time, I'm so disappointed right now thinking that we're going to have another Rambo that is just maybe a pale imitation, because Rambo 4 was so fucking good.
It's
and
great, yeah.
And Rocky Balboa has problems. It's not a perfect film by any stretch of the imagination.
It's a great send-off,
it's a nice send-off. Yeah, exactly. So
it is. It's very reminiscent of the first one. It does feel like you've come, in Balboa, circle. It does feel like you've really come full circle, and there's really nothing left to tell. You know, I'm not against, you know, adding another Rocky movie to the mix. Okay, fine, but it's definitely not going to be, you're just not going to one-up yourself anymore. And the idea of cancer to me feels like that. We have to have something, but of course you get into that area. In television, they call it jumping the shark. I don't know. I think in movies you just call it dog shit, but you know, you don't want to do that, right? You don't need to go that far to try to one-up yourself. Just keep either tell another story of this guy's life continuing on or fucking don't.
What this truly means is that I'm going to have to buy new box sets of all this shit to include the new chapter. Thanks.
Sony's at it again. This is really why they were attacking them. They're tired of this shit.
Yeah, of course, right? Yeah, exactly. Stop making us rebuy this shit.
Stop making new box sets of fucking Rocky. We're sick of it.
I think I've told you this before. I've rebought that series on so many different formats over the years. It's unbelievable. I should be getting a trip to the set. All right. Let's talk about something else here. Oh, Foxcatcher came out recently here, and this movie's getting a lot of publicity for Steve Carell's performance.
Good and bad.
Channing Tatum's. Yeah, good and bad now, because the character that Channing Tatum plays in the film, Mark Schultz, local Bay Area wrestler from Palo Alto, has been viciously attacking the director, Bennett Miller, very well-known director, did Moneyball and Oscar-nominated director, very well-esteemed. This makes no sense, because I saw interviews as recently as 3 or 4 weeks ago where Schultz was just praising the work that was done on the film and Miller as a genius. And as of December 31st, he just went on Twitter, went on a rampage, and it really kind of threatened him in a lot of, I mean, not so many words, but intimidating tweets, to say the least, wouldn't you say?
Sounds like a crazy person, yeah. On the internet is what it sounds like, which it is. So I guess it is what it is, right?
What if he really did follow through and like fuck the director up or like kill the director? You know what I mean? What if they made a movie about the movie?
If that's
being made
the case,
but
that's,
you know,
not
what
he's saying, right? That's not what the tweets say either. The tweets say he's going to end his career. I don't know. If they were life threatening, I'd probably take that a little more seriously.
What I've read about this subject here, and this is all speculation because Schultz really hasn't said anything on record, but it's speculated that he's upset about the perceived sexual nature of the relationship between his character and DuPont, but which is, you know, didn't happen in real life, was played up for dramatic effect. Fine, but he saw the film, he saw cuts of the film, and now he's saying that, or somebody's saying around that he's reading reviews where,
well, maybe he didn't notice it pointed out. But yeah, it was pointed out later on.
Okay, well, if that's a subtext to a film, then, I mean, you're mad about subtext? I don't understand, like...
Well, it could, yeah, I don't know. It depends on how it changes the dynamics of, you know, of the characters, right? Of the three characters. I don't know.
Call me cynical.
I haven't seen the movie.
Money. I think this has to do with money.
Really? You think he's trying to, he wanted more money for it? I mean, he just came out with his own book version of this. So he's going to get money from that.
I don't know. It's bizarre to me. This is absolutely, because it's not, he was there on set. He was there the whole time. It's not, this isn't like it was a pull it over my eyes type thing. You know, this is, you were fully involved. That's what, and to his credit, Miller hasn't publicly addressed any of this. So it's bizarre to say the least.
Yep. It is weird, but I don't know. I really don't know how you deal with this. I guess
there's a lot of bizarre movie shit going on between the hacking and this. It just, it's, I mean, this has been an odd award. Well,
that was the other thing. People were saying that perhaps Mark Schultz's accounts had been hacked, but it doesn't, I mean, I don't know.
No, because he apologized for going on the raid, but he says he stands by what he said. He did acknowledge that.
Okay, so he
erased these. Yeah. So he does acknowledge that he put these up. But, you know, this could also be a case of of drinking and tweeting. You know,
that's
the original
what I was
going to
say. That's really what it sounds like. Yeah, original.
The original drunk tweeter was Michael Bay back in the day.
Michael
Bay
is about the worst when he gets drunk on the internet. Yeah. And that's kind of what this reads like. It's someone who's just drinking and slowly getting more pissed off and like thinking about it more and more. It's like, you know, so I don't know. I mean, it sounds like he really feels this way. I haven't seen the movie, so I don't know. I don't know what it would mean for.
I think you skipped over that Michael Bay story there a little quickly. Let's get a little history lesson here. Trevor was on MichaelBay.com or Shoot for the Yen, whatever that was, years ago.
What do you want?
Fucking years ago.
He used and, Michael and Bay used Bay to get drunk.
Come on. Yeah. Go ahead.
He just used to get drunk, and he would openly admit this. On the, and these posts would be deleted later on. But there was another person who ran the site, because it was just a forum in a way, right? There was a forum, right. And there was also a blog. I think it's still.
And they had like an Ask Mikey or Talk to Mikey. It was like an AMA Reddit bullshit.
No, he would just post when he got drunk. He would be out with his friends, and he would drink, and he would come back and post. And it was during the. Blu-ray,
HD
DVD,
Blu-ray, yeah,
HD DVD and Blu-ray war, and he would post a lot about how he hated HD DVD and Blu-ray should be awesome, and his Transformers should only come out in Blu-ray, this and that, and they were just crazy rants. And you're like, who gives a shit?
And they would be gone the next day, but they were like, they're ranting.
They would be gone.
A madman.
He'd be like, I can't believe. Transformers is on HD DVD, but not on Blu-ray. My friends, I was out drinking last night with my friends, and they couldn't. They were like, "What? You cannot get this on Blu-ray." I was just like, "What the fuck are you talking about?" And I want to know who he's talking to. These people who are like, "I want Transformers on Blu-ray."
When I read those posts, I envisioned that scene in Dark City where the guy just draws fucking spirals on the wall over and over. I envisioned that as being like Michael Bay as he wrote those.
I do remember that. That was the one I remember. It happened since.
Several times.
It was very odd.
Now somebody's got their hands on his Twitter account or Facebook account, and they're doing a better job. But back then, it was a little bit more direct. That was like the original drunk tweeting, though. So just wanted to get that
it was
out
weird,
there.
Yeah. And it only happened at typically we're up. Obviously, it's 1:20 a.m. right now when we're recording this, so we're up to see it. But by 7-8 a.m., they would be gone. It was weird.
Yeah, it was a thing of beauty, to be honest with you. Thing of beauty. All right, Jeff Wadlow, who came to fame and winning a contest to get his film financed. Did you know that? That's how Cry Wolf was made.
Yeah.
He won like a refreshing filmmaker. Like, remember those Coca-Cola refreshing filmmaker awards? Hey, where did anyone go for those?
I didn't.
I remember used to watching those and go, man, these motherfuckers, they won the Coke Award. They didn't do shit after that. Maybe they did. Maybe they're doing like episodes of CW shows. I don't know.
Hey, that's a living. Ooh.
Hey, but Jeff Wadlow. I just like that name, Wadlow.
I know.
Who has parlayed a somewhat good successful name. Career into Kick-Ass 2 and a couple of other guilty pleasures, I should say, has now done a polish on the Masters of the Universe property that they've been trying to get off the ground since 1987's canon film version. So,
and they're saying the script is done.
Yeah, the script is done and ready
That's
to
what I heard,
roll.
So thank God.
Yeah, right. Yeah. No word yet what this is going to be about. Obviously,
well, they come to Earth.
Man, Chris Adam.
Yeah, right. I believe Courtney Cox is in the sequel.
I mean, if they do anything, they learn anything. You have got to stay on Eternia. I mean, I think we have the green screen capability now to make that happen.
No.
This is not.
It's better.
All that. I don't think this property really needs to be redone. I don't think this is going to be redone in a way that's going to please fans of the original.
Well, they're going to try to Transformers it. They're going to try to just do what they've done with everything else. So what could it be? It's just going to be He-Man, right? Versus Skeletor.
Well, this has been in development for
that's it.
At
least I don't know what else you can do with it
actively. John Woo was attacked at one point. Mm-hmm. Now John M. Chu, who did G.I.
these kinds of movies,
attached.
It's unfortunate what it is and the style that it is, because these kinds of movies had a hot streak, in the 80s, maybe, well, actually from the 70s, I guess, but into the 80s and a little into the 90s. But I don't know. I mean, nowadays we haven't. Look at the Hercules movie that did well, right? I mean, I don't know. What are you going to expect from this?
Yeah, where's the expectation? Yeah, where does the roof lie on something like this, and how popular really is this brand now?
And are they going to run around in banana hammocks,
Then you leave.
There's no, like, but there's no turtles. Bodybuilders nowadays. I mean, you have pro wrestlers playing parts, right? And that's the closest that you get to someone who would be like a He-Man character. Even though Dolph was, you know, tall and fairly thin, he was still very built. I don't know. Those guys are hard to come by nowadays.
You know, I watched the Canon Films documentary, Electric Boogaloo, the untold story of the Canon Films, mm-hmm. and they give a nice little anecdote about Sylvester Stallone doing Over the Top and visiting the set of Masters of the Universe and seeing Dolph and looking at somebody and saying, you gave that guy lines, you know, like, basically, because he didn't, obviously, in Rocky IV. And it's you think about that, and it's true, man. This is, you get somebody like Kellen Lutz, who's got the physique but does not have the talent, really, to go behind that. I mean, and that guy I liked in Expendables 3, but he was such a stiff in that Hercules flick, you know? So, strange property. Strange property. But the Turtles movie obviously has got to be the reason that this has gotten even greenlit at this point for a rewrite.
I haven't seen it, but it has to be so different than this. This just, the essence of this fucking, you know, land that these guys are from, and the way they dress and everything, it's just not something people flock to nowadays. Period. You know, it's basically a sword and sandals flick, you know?
Yeah, with sci-fi
mixed just,
in.
It doesn't work so well. Somebody's, yeah, but you've played with this. The toys. I think we've all played with the toys. It's banana hammocks and bodybuilders, right? There's no way you're going to stay anywhere near true to that. To what the original, you know, cartoons and stuff is, and have it sell. I just don't see it.
I say you just rewatch the Dolph version and just bask in that greatness.
Okay. It's pretty bad.
Yeah, it's good bad though. Let's be honest, kind of. Come on.
I don't know.
Yeah. I saw it in the theater. It's the sad part about that as a kid. Yeah, that's why I like it. Speaking of seeing things in a theater, did you know that last year, 2014, had the lowest attendance at theaters since 1995.
Mm-hmm.
Ouch. Yeah, things didn't grow shit back in
95. It's not really an ouch.
It's not. Well, it is an ouch because it went down about 5%.
It's not an ouch. Ooh, from last year. I mean, give me a break. We're talking about $100 million or 100 million tickets, the difference between that. And that's a common fluctuation throughout the past decade. This is still the sixth year in a row they've sold over $10 billion worth of tickets. It's a nothing thing. I've read all the headlines. I think it's hysterical because you just look at the numbers and it has no meaning. Right? Because next year is going to be outlandish.
$1.2 billion. And you're right, because 27 movies skipped this year, including Fast 7, The Minions, the Despicable Me knockoff. So a lot of things that could have been huge hits this year. It's a lot of tickets have been pushed to next year.
If this is your down year, this just proves to me, again, as I've always said, or when you look at these numbers, I mean, the great business to be in, if you're a content creator, is the movies, because this shit does not fluctuate. Like, you make fucking money. It keeps going, right? You can't lose. This is a down year, if this is your example of a bad year, you're like, oh, shit, these guys got fucked. If this is it, I don't know. You know, you want to describe these guys taking, you know, an anal raping, they didn't even get the tip in. It's nothing.
Just the tip. Yeah. Followed by outro my hair. The thing is this, we've had some late in the year really big hits. Mockingjay, which is slowly marching to the number one film of the year, which surprises me at this, the legs on these fucking the Hunger Games movies.
Well, it beat 300 before the end of the year, so.
Right, and The Hobbit has done exceptionally well for a third in the series, especially after the kind of downturn of the last one financially, and other things have performed exceedingly well. And
this year's
Into the Woods.
I'm going to be fucking nuts.
Yeah, exactly. And I think we're going to see that as soon as February. I mean, even Taken has a possibility to really break out.
Sure.
And a couple other titles, but I think...
Well, this year, may go $11 billion over. You know, they almost did that in 2013. I think this year's got a good shot of doing that.
Well, we'll have a lot of spillover even into 16, as crazy as that says, because we have, you know, obviously Batman versus Superman then, but at the end of the year, next year, you have Mission Impossible 5 and Star Wars opening up within days of each other, which propel that to the Christmas season and then to the new year. So the next 2 years look very safe as terms of tickets being sold and people returning to the theaters. Really content drives all this, and the content really wasn't there this year. We saw that, and when it was,
yeah, it wasn't.
You say Guardians was things like that. People went out and saw it. So,
well, they had. I mean, it wasn't that there weren't that many movies released. It was just the what we didn't have this year, which we have normally had the past few years, is the tentpoles. You know, got moved off. So next year's just a tentpole after it's going to be nuts.
It's almost the 52
summer of 2015 is fucking crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. Can't wait, dear guy. Why don't we take a quick break and come back with our reviews of four new movies coming out.
Ooh.
This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Hey, Nolan, look what everybody is saying about the Lair of the Unwanted.
I know. Jess and Rachel at Real Insights said, The Lair is our number one favorite podcast.
Yeah. And Nick Job of Demented Podcast said, I look forward to every episode of The Lair.
You know, Dylan Fields of the Lambcast says, I'm planning to get a Lair of the Unwanted tattoo across my face. I love it so much.
Yeah, and Mad Hatter of MatineeCast said, I fucking love this podcast. I would die for it.
Yeah, Scott and Whitney at Frankly My Dear said, we got married thanks to Lair of the Unwanted.
Kai of the MILFcast said, dude, I'm speechless. Check out the Almost Lammy-nominated podcast about the best of the worst movies that's out there. Come see what the fuss is all about. Check out The Lair of the Unwanted on iTunes.
Did you know I got a tramp stamp of the Lair of the Unwanted podcast?
I didn't know that. I'll have to check it out tonight.
I did. You never noticed?
No. You just keep my eyes closed. All right. But I do like the fact that they're playing Walk On by with the little background music there. Because you keep walking on by. Anyways, let's talk about some movies here. Should we walk by or should we sit down and watch them? The Equalizer. Tell me about The Equalizer. Is it worth watching? I got it here. I haven't looked at it yet. What's up?
I really, really loved The Equalizer.
Loved?
I got to say, I did. I loved it. The small parts. This is Antoine Fuqua, who does, you know, hits more than misses for me, but he has had his movies that I didn't like. But this one I really, really loved. He just, the ending's a bit, you know, on the nose and kind of, you know, okay. But at least there's a lot. Obviously, the movie you're going to compare this to is Man on Fire. And there are moments in it that are very, that you're like, oh, good God, you know, don't do that style. No, you're too close. But they're almost more like, they're so fast or like kind of nods, like, yeah, we kind of know. And when the ending comes about, you think, oh my God, this is the Man on Fire ending. And then it's, you know, just, it's not. So that was nice, I thought. It's fairly long, but I still really liked it. The small moments in it are great. Just seeing a director who knows how to film a scene where people are talking, you know, and it's almost like it's straight out of a film school, where you start with the wide shot and then you go in to the two shot and then to the singles and stuff. And it's just, I don't know. It was kind of neat to see that style again, which we don't necessarily get anymore.
Well, it sounds like you're basically applauding this for its professionalism, for its nice, you know, basically professional.
Yeah, it's written really well. I mean, the acting, Denzel's great in it. As well as, Chloe Grace, she's not really in it so much, but, she was great in it. Everyone that shows up, you know, Bill Pullman. I really liked the movie, I guess. I don't know.
So you're saying check it out.
Yeah. I definitely say check it out. If you like, you know, older, it felt like a 90s indie action movie, if that makes sense. Like, this movie could have played on Bravo right after La Femme Nikita. You know, that's the way I felt while watching it.
So stylized but not overly stylized. That's what I'm curious about.
No, but there are moments. Yeah, there are moments when it goes into that Tony Scott thing, but they're like, it's not, I don't know, he has an eagle eye, so that's a little much, I thought, here and there. But they kind of played into the character. But they do have moments of Tony Scott stylization as if it was Man on Fire, but more of a, it felt like more of a nod, and they jump right out of it real quick, so I don't know, it's weird.
He's got the Steven Seagal Lawman eagle eye.
Yes, he does, he does, and he... Yeah. He ties, it's part of the character, his quirk is he likes to time things, and so he notices, and they do the eagle line, he notices everything, he's like, okay, I think it's going to take this long, he ties, it really doesn't play into anything, but they do a good job of establishing the character and quirks and things. It's a movie that starts off where he's doing shit, and you're like, why the fuck are you doing this? You kind of get a sense of his day and like who he is and what he's doing. And then it kind of plays into the rest of the movie. Oh, this is this kind of a guy. You know, he does these types of things, and it helps him, you know, equalize. I don't know. I thought it was a really good movie.
Set itself up for a sequel. In this, could you see a sequel with this character, or is this a better?
Yeah, sure it does, but it doesn't. It's, I mean, either way, it works as a one and done. You could easily sequelize. Obviously, this is the remake of the television show. So yeah, I mean, it could be episodic if you wanted it to.
All right, and you caught up with an old one. You saw The Wolf of Wall Street, which I did finally see Wolf of Wall Street earlier. I'd have put this on my top 10 last year. That's how much I liked one. Yeah,
I liked it. I don't know that I loved it. I mean, interestingly enough, they feature The Equalizer, the television show, in Wolf of Wall Street. So that was,
they do. Yeah,
I thought that was kind of fun. Yeah, I liked Wolf of Wall Street. I thought it was funny, and did everything right. For me, it reminded me a lot of Pain and Gain.
Right.
And I just didn't understand why people didn't like Pain and Gain. And I heard your reasons why you didn't like Pain and Gain. I'm watching Wolf of Wall Street, and I'm like, well, how did you like this movie if your reasoning for not liking Pain and Gain was that those guys were assholes? I mean, there's not a person in fucking The Wolf of Wall Street that you like. They're all fucking useless pieces of shit. I still think it's a great movie because of that. You know, I don't have to like people, I guess.
But these guys were ruining people's lives financially, but it was a little bit.
They were pricks. They ruined their own lives. Different than kidnapping somebody. The dude fucking drove around on lewds and destroyed, right? He put everything at risk, right? That was the whole point of this movie, was that these guys were risk takers, right? The whole conversation between, with Jonah Hill's marrying his cousin, and there's a 60% chance of the kids turning out wrong, but fuck it. He's had two of them, right? They don't give a shit, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things going on in that movie that are works. I think the humor, I think Jonah Hill is
I agree.
Really good in that.
I think the humor worked really well. I love the lewd thing when he drives the car.
Love it.
I won't ruin it for if you haven't seen it, but you probably have. But I think this was really funny.
His return to style, to form, to the energy that he brought to some of it. It was so good to me that I made me want to watch some of their other collaborations again, like Gangs of New York and The Departed, and especially even The Aviator. I mean, because I really think that the pairing, first of all, DiCaprio has got to be our most talented actor of our generation, of you and I's generation. Yeah. And I hate to say that because when Titanic came out, it was. You know, I like Titanic the movie even then, but he was such a pinup person at that point.
Well, you never thought that he would
respect
that he would be able to pull off roles like this nowadays. You know, you just never saw it coming in a way. But he slowly kind of, I don't know, he just picked the right roles to get himself here, I guess, at this point.
People
right?
can compare other actors to him, you know, like Ryan Gosling or even Channing Tatum in a sense, but like nobody's been able to pick the commercial projects that have also gotten the Academy nominations and all that kind of stuff.
You could make fun of him very easily back in the Titanic days. In the early days, you're like, oh, look at this pretty boy. You know, he's good for this kind of shit. But he, of course,
even then he had done
proved
the basketball diaries.
I know, but that was, it wasn't, I mean, you say that, and that's good for you, but I'm talking about for to get to his career to be worth money, like where he is now. That's something that you don't see nowadays, right?
Well, he smartly
and nobody knows about the Basketball Diaries. I mean, you and me, and I'm sure people listening to this podcast know about that. But if we're talking about normal people, right, they're going to make fun of him more or less. Even when Titanic came out, and that was a huge hit, people made fun of him. You know, he still looked like a little. He looked really too young and this and that. And you never thought, even I thought, like he wouldn't be able to play an adult very well. Like he wouldn't age as well. And he still looks fairly young, but damned if he doesn't have the chops do anything.
You find out he's 40 and you're like, he's 40?
Yeah, I know.
Like, Jesus. You know, it's like, my goodness, 40? But you're right. He's got the chops to do all this. Jonah Hill I thought was a revelation in this movie.
He was great, yeah.
I really liked the way that
McConaughey was great. I didn't hate the movie, but I wasn't really feeling the movie because they starts off and he's, I don't know. It's a hell of a story. It's all over the place. It just doesn't feel very centered most of the time. You know, it's a kind of a wandering, just fucking story, but it doesn't really hit you until you get him and McConaughey in that scene where McConaughey's explaining how shit works, right? When they're having lunch. That was a scene to me that was like, oh, shit, this is going to be a great fucking movie.
that's setting up the rules of the world, obviously. And it was a great scene. Yeah. And then later on in the movie, you know, when they're using that mantra over and over, and that kind of like that theme for the movie was great. And then when it all falls apart, Kyle Chandler, who I love from Friday Night Lights, is great in that too, as he's, you know, the kind of antagonist character. And
I thought they underutilized him a little bit.
I thought they did too, except for in that one scene, which is greatly done, when he's given the monologue about, you know, what he could do for him, and then he says, "Can you repeat that?" And then Scorsese pulls back to that three shot.
There touches right to this. I tell me about when they're on the boat, and he's telling him like, "Oh, like my money gives me all this and this and that. Exactly. You're gonna go home, ride in the subway. You're gonna do this, this and that." And when he actually does ride that subway and looks around at all those people who are just fucking nothing, and this dude took, I mean, for reasons of spoiling, I'm just going to, but he obviously did all these horrible things and then got just a slap on the wrist, right? I mean, it was nothing. And he still winds up with all this shit, like the house, the man, everything. He's a horrible human being. And here you have this great guy who's standing up for the lower class people, and he just is nothing, right? And all these other lower class. It was like this movie was like about like just go
that
and
shot,
like who gives a shit. That was great.
That shot to me was the shot that Scorsese put in there to be like to let you know where he felt on the subject, because I think he didn't, as much as he was glamorous,
but it wasn't didactic. It was like the perfect touch, you know. It was like a perfect little touch. You're just like, oh, no, that's
Scorsese
beautiful.
Was on his game here, especially after Hugo. I mean, this is really a return to form for him. I mean, I watched Bringing Out the Dead recently again. I
love
that movie.
Really?
Really?
I think it's great.
I watched it again. I feel I the first hour was excellent, and then it goes fucking strange on me for a minute there. But
his movies are a bit wandering, I think. And if you're not in the right mood, they can feel longer than they are.
Sometimes they're more than one story fighting in within a movie. Like look at Wolf of Wall Street. There's many little vignettes in there and
I love Reiner as the dad was fucking great. I mean,
That was fantastic.
And it's so simple. I mean, we're talking about the Equalizer scene. I mean, when it introduces his dad, it's like motherfucking cocksucker who's calling me at this time. I'm like, hello, how are you? Like that shit. It shouldn't be it's just such a simple idea, but it's freaking hysterical.
And executed with professionalism.
Exactly.
All right, let's move on and talk about the Grand Budapest Hotel. This is Wes Anderson's Darling that was released earlier last year.
Yep, this is a Wes Anderson movie, and in all ways, this is a Wes Anderson movie. So if you don't like Wes Anderson, you're not going to like this.
Didn't want to see it because of that.
Yeah, I really liked it. I thought it was pretty good. This is, by all accounts, a winding, wandering fucking story. Yeah, but I still liked it. I don't know. It's a little bit less hokey than it's really not. It's a Wes Anderson movie. I really can't say anything more to it. I thought the performances were great, but again, they're Wes Anderson styled characters. It's told in chapters.
God, sorry. See, if you don't like it, you're not gonna. I checked after the Life Aquatic. I mean, I couldn't do anymore.
I didn't like Life Aquatic either. I didn't watch that
limited
one.
Oh man, I put my ass
I watched
up
the
some
one
shit.
Before this though, the one with the kids who run away, which wasn't bad, and this one I liked a little bit more than that because it was a little less.
This
involved,
movie looked like a really production design and set design is fantastic,
which is where he's been moving. Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, I say I don't like Wes Anderson movies, but I like Spike Jonze movies, which aren't that far removed from Wes Anderson. Uh-huh. But Wes Anderson just gets too cute for his own good, and it's to me it's almost too much attention. Like, look, I'm making a movie. It's too precious to me. It interrupts the flow constantly, and when the stories wander like that, it just gives me more time to kind of just look at the emptiness of it all. You know, like, look how clever we are. It's all fake, and none of this is really. He has a very detached cynicism to the movies when he's showing you something kind of sweet at the same time. I don't know. I hate the tone. Bottle Rocket, I still think, is his best movie he's ever done.
Bottle Rocket's great, but it's nothing like a Wes Anderson movie, really. It takes place in the real world, almost. As close to the real world as Wes Anderson's ever going to get, probably.
Well, so did Rushmore, too, to a lot of, you know.
I thought Rushmore took place in less of the real world than Bottle Rocket, but yeah, you're right.
Absolutely.
It did.
More so than any other.
I mean, this certainly is out there, as are some of the things. But I really did. I've liked a couple of other things that were like this. I really like the Royal Tenenbaums.
Yeah, Tenenbaums is a good flick. I forgot. I always forget he did that movie because that once again is kind of its own little.
Well, that I think is the best one. It was the first one like this that he did. But that, I think, was the best one. And the Life Aquatic's got to be the worst one, which was the one right after that. So
my goodness, that was a tasty.
Yeah, I didn't like that one either. But this one I liked, you know, but I can only recommend if you like weird stuff or Wes Anderson stuff. And I'm not going to, I don't know, I certainly wouldn't recommend this to a normal,
not to the general population.
yeah, it has it's a delicacy, I guess. Is, well, I don't know.
Well, speaking of delicacies, I saw the documentary on the Canon Group, which was responsible for a lot of schlock released in the 80s. They had a distribution with MGM, who put their stuff out on video to a wider audience. We're talking American Ninja, the Delta Force, all sorts of stuff. I mean, too many
He-Man,
to name here.
Masters
He-Man,
of Man,
Over the Top. I mean, you can go on and on and on. Probably at one point or another, you have seen a Canon. Anyone listening to this podcast has definitely seen a Canon film.
He didn't know it.
Anyone that says they don't in their age group has stumbled upon one on television or somewhere along the lines. But there is a documentary out there done by the guys who did Not Quite Human, which was about Ozploitation films. And it's called Electric Boogaloo, The Untold Story of Canon. Not to be confused with the Go-Go Boys, which is the documentary done by the Canon guys themselves. And you find out in retaliation for this documentary, which is hilarious, and it says they beat us to release by 3 months, which is just the Canon way, too. You know, it's a theirs is a shoddier production. This documentary is very well done. Got a lot of pretty much all the talent that worked there who is now are very recognizable people now in the business, actors, directors, writers. And the stories they come up with is just story after story. And what you get a sense of is that these guys loved making movies, and they were loved being involved in making movies. And a lot of people that went to Millennium or New Image were raised in the Canon system and have done things more successfully than Canon ever dreamed of. But great documentary. Anybody that even has a passing interest in 80s pop culture should see this. It'll be available shortly on home video and streaming services, but I highly recommend. This is one of the best quasi fanboy documentaries ever.
This guy made that. This is the guy that made another documentary people might know. The I don't remember the
Not
name.
Not Quite
of it,
Hollywood.
Not Quite Hollywood, which was Australian Ozploitation documentary. That's really good, and if you get a chance, that might still be streaming.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And it's done in the same way with that poppy visual style and a lot of energy and great. I mean, the stories that come up about the on-set stuff and the way things were done. And there's a story about Menahem Golan seeing Romancing the Stone, and they wanted to make King Solomon's Mine. And he keeps saying, you read this one about get me the,
I've heard
get
this
me the
story,
Stone
yeah.
Woman. Get me the Stone Woman. And they found Sharon Stone. A week into shooting, he looks at a daily and literally says, who's this fucking bitch? And they thought that they wanted Sharon Stone, but he wanted Kathleen Turner from Romancing the Stone. And the people doing the impersonations, you have Alex Winter from Bill and Ted's in there. people do impersonations of them that are hilarious. And it's got to be right on because they all say pretty much the same stuff about them. But their tenacity and getting stuff done and
I really
making the kind of movies
this.
They did. Yeah, you got to see it. It's absolutely fantastic. I recommend it to anybody that has a love for movies.
I mean, yeah, there was blowback from this, I remember. And so you're saying they made a different documentary?
Well, as it winds down, you find out that the cousins split up, and the Lombada movies were coming out. And the Lombada was the dance craze in the – or supposed dance craze in the early – this is before the Macarena and all that shit in the early 90s. And they had made a movie. One had one in production. The other one split and put his movie into production. The movies were released on the same fucking weekend in 1990, which is crazy. So they kind of go into like how they were rushing things out to beat one another. Well, they go to interview them. They don't want anything to do with the production. And then they announce that they're making their own documentary. And in the end credit is that they beat them into release Menahem Golan in their documentary by 3 months. But this one is produced by Brett Ratner, and it has a great sheen to it. I mean, I just see this. I can't implore people enough that like movies or that
which,
have,
this one, the one you
one
saw
Canon
was
movie.
Is Brett Ratner.
This is the Brett Ratner one. Yeah, this is the Electric Boogaloo. Check it out. All right, so the last movie we'll talk about today is Tusk, which I only got through the first 30 minutes before passing out on a NyQuil-induced haze and didn't find too much to like here. What did you think about Tusk?
Yeah, so I hated Tusk. This is worse of a movie than Red State, I thought. And a lot of the touches that he did in Red State aren't necessarily here. They are here. He does a good job set up some payoffs and, you know, creating a story that feeds off itself. But it just, I don't know, this, you really have to see this to believe how bad this is. It is not good at all. It's slow. It's boring. It jumps around like you wouldn't believe. I mean, just skips whole
that
things.
First act is very convoluted that I saw.
I'm trying not to ruin it, but there's the transformation. You kind of expect the focus is not so much on the, first of all, this isn't a horror movie. The focus is not on horror. It's on the characters. And when you listen to the podcast this is based on, and I've heard a little bit of it, you begin to understand this is an incredibly half-baked idea. He fell in love with certain aspects of some things they talked about, which don't flow well together in the movie. And it just resulted in a movie that really is just it's not substantial, and it should be. The ideas behind it, certainly the emotional things he's trying to tackle with it, they just come off as bad. You know, and you saw the part where Justin Long and Michael Parks first meet, right? And they talk.
Yes. Right.
The reaction, the acting and the reactions of Justin Long's character playing against this Michael Parks straight man, I guess, if you will. Because Justin Long's acting like an asshole.
It's obnoxious. It's almost like Kevin Smith can't realize it. That's not how a character
He did it
act.
On purpose. If you watch, there's a great documentary on there called 20 Years in the Making where he kind of explains all these, his thoughts and almost kind of what was going on in some of those scenes. And it's, again, a wish for him to be like other filmmakers like Quentin Tarantino or other people like that, and having seen their styles. And he's trying to ping pong it. You know, he's trying to create a scene which is both funny and scary. And it doesn't work, right? It should be one way or the other. And Justin Long's just, he acts horrible. He acts like an asshole, this Michael Parks character. And it's off-putting, right? It's not, because we're with the music, the score, the shot, the settings. Everything's going with Michael Parks. Everything's going with this ominous, scary, weird guy who's telling these
right, but
crazy
that,
stories of life. And Justin
takes
Long,
you right out of it.
Yeah, and Justin Long turns Justin Long. He's like, with his like glass of tea, like, oh, fucking crazy, man. That's fucking awesome. And you're like, really? I don't know. It's and the podcasting's unbelievable as well. I don't believe that they're making shit off their stupid podcast.
Not enough, well, we know not enough to finance a trip to Canada.
I know a little bit about that. The podcast doesn't seem like anything good. As the movie progresses, there's Genesis Rodriguez plays Justin Long's girlfriend in this, and Haley Joel Osment is his friend and does the podcast with him. And there's these two characters have another relationship that goes on. It's fucking weird. I just can't describe it. I'd like to tell you not to see it, but I think people should see it just so that everyone can say how horrible it is.
Describe the documentary, though, that you watched on the disc.
The documentary is great. I didn't watch the making of. I just watched the 20 Years in the Making doc, which is already 24 minutes long. So after I watched that, I was kind of done. But he does go through, as I said, goes through and explains kind of the process of making the movie and thoughts behind certain things. They kind of, part the clouds in a way for certain, because you're like, why the fuck did you do that? Oh, okay, I get it now. But the ending of it is really just inspiring, especially if you're thinking about becoming a filmmaker or anything, where he kind of goes through and just says, like, just do it, you know, just get off your butt and do it. Cause he's made, this Tusk movie now, and whether it's good or bad, this is Kevin Smith. He's had a lot of haters. You know, me in particular, but I still love the guy. And I love a lot of his movies. He's doing Clerks 3 next. Can't wait. He's also doing Hit Somebody.
I know. Finally. Right.
Finally happening. So I'm looking forward to that as well. But he does say that no matter what, in the end, he's created Tusk, and this movie exists, and that at the end of time now, there will be someone on a message board somewhere talking about how much Tusk sucks, you know? And if that's what it comes to, if that's the end of it all, then, you know, he's done more than most, and it's kind of inspiring. I don't know, the dude definitely can shrug off the hate in a way. He does go on to say, like, that's what an artist, you know, the idea of being a filmmaker and artist isn't to make people happy necessarily. It isn't to get butts in the seat, but it is to start a conversation in a way, get people thinking, you know, that kind of stuff. And that to me is, it's like, yeah, all right, you get a pass, you know, for me for saying that, you son of a bitch, because that's exactly the way I feel about it. Even though I'll go on to say how much I hate Tusk for
so many slander reasons. Your movie all over the place.
I will, but I still like the guy. He's does a great job.
Yeah, of course. We got him on the top of the podcast.
Yeah.
Okay, let's do the trailer attic portion of today's show.
Trailers can be wondrous things, giving us insight into the unseen movies of the future. But when they're bad, fire photon torpedoes. Shields up, red alert. Prepare for trailer addict.
Okay.
Only a couple of trailers on today's show trailer because we're in a trailer addict. Drought.
There's a waiting couple.
Of an Ant-Man trailer.
Just had one.
We got two. We got Black Sea, we'll start off with, which is
we're going to talk about
nautical...
the other one?
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll fuck it.
Black Sea, which is a nautical thriller starring Jude Law, directed by Kevin MacDonald.
As long as
you
it's
like
not
that,
a...
let's get...
as long as it's not a
nautical with me.
It could be a nautical,
nautical
thriller.
Get... Catch a nautical upside.
You know what nauticals are? You got a nautical thriller. Nauticals are the fake, but you know, you get your dog. You need his balls removed, you know. Well, you can get fake balls for him. Make him feel like more of a man again. Called nudicles.
Nudicles.
It's awesome.
Well, Jude Law's got a nice set of fake balls in this Black Sea trailer because he's playing a hero. This is an ex-diver.
I don't know if he's a hero.
He's like some sort of submarine captain. And he gets
he kind of looks like it might be bad. I don't know. It's
in the bottom
of
the sea, basically. This looks like a rip-roaring adventure. They're looking at for a sunken U-boat. I really liked this trailer, even though it looks like a very foreign film in a lot of ways. Directed by Kevin MacDonald, did The Last King of Scotland and The Eagle more recently, which I thought was an underrated action film. Did a good job there of blending ideas and action, and this looks like it's going to be the same way. I like these confined-type thrillers. It's one space, claustrophobic setting. I thought this trailer really was good. What'd you think?
Yeah, it's well-timed. Obviously, you know, the cheesiness of using the sonar sound to build tension in it is kind of works, though.
Yeah, but it's well played out in a lot of ways, too.
Yeah, it's exactly what you would expect from this kind of a movie, but it looks so great. It's really the only way you can say it, right? It looks like this movie is going to meet expectations perfectly, and it's going to be a little bit of a surprise for because it kind of came out of nowhere. I didn't know that this movie existed, but
yeah,
it looks really good.
This trailer came out all the way back in October. It kind of slid past my view until I caught it recently. And I said, oh, let's see. I recommend it. We talk about it on the show because it looks so good to me.
It looks better than Phantom.
Yeah. But this looks like something like a lot of these kind of thrillers have this look to it. Below, that Aronofsky, David Twilley film.
I liked
film,
Below,
and,
but yeah.
Same
this
way,
looks better than
looks,
that.
This looks like a fun, not fun, but adventure.
What's a heist? Like it's half heist, half horror, almost in certain
man the
aspects of
a lot
it.
Of ways. Yeah.
Slash, yeah, you know, heist gone wrong. That you know, it just hits kind of all the things that you would need to hit. It's a drama at one point. You know, it looks good. That never looks like it's necessarily ever goes into the cheese mode, but still looks like it'd be fun.
Jude Law's had such a strange career. You know, he's done these certain roles.
He's done weird action
Alfie
movies like
whatnot.
This.
He does like Repo Man and this.
Yeah, exactly.
Weird shit. But this looks like it has a legitimate chance to be a good movie as opposed to Repo Man, which was just an odd idea.
Yeah.
That was misbegotten.
Not good?
To say that. Yeah. No, not good. All right. Well, we talked about a movie last year called Welcome to Yesterday, which has been pushed to this year and given a new title of Project Almanac. So we thought we'd refresh your memory since this comes out January 30th. Oh, yeah. Sort of that coming out right now. right out here.
Ooh,
come and see.
You're right over there? Yeah. Oh, yeah.
This movie is produced by Michael Bay. This is a found footage type flick about kids with telekinetic power because they they have a time machine. So people think they have telekinetic
machine.
Power. I think this trailer works. I thought it worked the first time we saw it. I think it works even better now. I like this title better, Project Almanac. I like all the kids in this. I like the humor in this trailer. I'm for this.
Yeah.
I think this is a possible franchise here.
Yeah, I think we said we liked it last time. I guess you could franchise this. I do think that finally, it's been a while, But finally, we have another movie that found footage. Looks like it works for it.
Yeah. This does have that. What was the one with the indie film with the time machine that we both really like?
Primer?
Primer. It has that vibe in the sense where they find things under the ground. It's not... and they're kind of. They're playing with things. But I also get a Chronicle type vibe. I get a Jumper type vibe. So we can.
It's definitely more of an action oriented thing. It definitely has a budget.
Yeah. This thing looks slick. I mean, I like it. I mean, the poster itself. Which I'll post on the page of MovieMavericks.com with this podcast, reminds me of 80s movies like My Science Project and, you know, Manhattan Project and things like that. You know, these sci-fi kids fucking around with space-time continuum and then the circumstances and, you know, like they're smarter than all the adults. I like when they win the lottery on this and the one kid's pissed because they don't want to go back and win the lottery again and they show him with a big check and he's pouting, you know. It's says he wanted one Maserati or 17 Camrys. The touches in this really work. The timing, I thought, once again. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'd see this. I give this a pass.
What more can you say?
What more can you say?
I don't know what we said last time. I have to go back and listen. We're probably like, this movie fucking sucks.
Yeah, we know.
No, I think we said it would look good back then, too.
A year wiser.
I think this
is
practically the same trailer. I wonder what they did for us. But originally supposed to come out in February. I think it got pushed back to summer, and then it got pushed back to this year, obviously, which I wonder, two pushbacks? What happened?
One of the 27 movies I said at the top of the hour that got pushed to 2015, so this will come out on January 30th. I think this looks good, although January 30th is a suspect date, but everything's loaded this year, so
well, we know. If Woman in Black 2 has anything to say...
Oh, that bitch got a lot to say. Let me tell you what. She's saying a lot of thanks. Well, that's going to wrap up episode 260 on today's podcast. If you haven't done so, go to boxofficeace.com and get in this box office prediction game. The year has just started, and a fresh game is afloat or afoot, depending on how you look at it. Yeah.
A boot.
A boot. Started it out with a toad, ended it with a foot. It's a boot 2 hours.
A boot.
Fucking American, guys. All right, speaking for Trevor Anderson, I am Jason Rugard, and we are the Movie Mavericks.
Oh my, another magnificent episode has come to an end. If you're craving more, set your destination to MovieMavericks.com, Warp 9. Engage!